It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Good to see you today, Sean.
And update here. You want to do an update? I still have not put any seed in the ground.
No, I have not either.
Okay.
Waiting on rain.
Right. So that's
it. Looks like it might be after opening day of gun season.
Right. So
I don't know.
And there's a pressure and there's a rush. I get it to get seed in the ground. My good friends and I talked about it. He's like, well, this is when I have to do it. I'm like, I got you.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of people have planted, no doubt. And some people tell me their green fields look beautiful.
Yeah, I just know that
some said they haven't got anything up yet.
Right,
you know?
That's what I worry about. So yeah, maybe that opening weekend in gun season, you and I are both not hunting, we're planting.
Well, we still hunt. I mean, it's legal to put corn out, so you still hunt
that.
Over corn.
You
so
do that.
Some people don't have green fields; they have corn fields.
That's right. That's true. That's our corn feeders. That's right.
Yeah.
So, on today's show, we're going to shift gears a little bit here and talk about the birds. And not just the birds, the migratory birds. It's always a great when we get Seth Maddox on. So we've known Seth as the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. But he's got that job. And then you got another hat on now, too, Seth. Congratulations. What's the new appointment?
Yeah, I was recently promoted to assistant chief of wildlife. So hopefully be handing the migratory bird stuff off here soon to a new employee.
Now, do you go, hey, thanks a lot, y'all. For right now, you got to do both jobs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I really appreciate this, y'all. Thank you for the promotion. Now I got to do both gigs. You'll have to introduce me to the person who takes over for you soon. But for now, we got you, and you're the person that we've talked to over the years on migratory birds. So I guess let's go to the even though it makes sense saying the name, if somebody who's not paying attention, what's your migratory birds? What birds in Alabama are you responsible for coordinating?
Well, essentially the game birds, so, you know, ducks, geese, doves mainly are the ones that we focus on, but we also focus on rails, gallinules, coots, woodcock, snipe, so all the migratory game birds.
All those other things when y'all fill out your HIP, which most people go, did not hunt, did not hunt, did not hunt. He's also responsible for those. So we'll talk about some of those species coming up. I guess the big story here, as we're looking at November coming up soon, and, you know, we're a month away. We're a month away from the start of duck season here in Alabama, big duck season. Let's talk about what to expect. Let's go to the big picture. I guess I didn't get a chance to talk to you this summer. How'd the May pond counts look? What's our fall flight looking like?
Yeah, ponds are up. Some of the counts were down for species. Mallards were down. Gadwall were up. You know, our bread and butter species, gadwall and green-winged tail, were up. Mallards were down. Pintails were down. Some of the other species were, you know, hovering about average. So overall, probably down. But that they count those in May. That survey takes place in May. So they're counting paired ducks, males and females together, and then lone males. And then they're counting ponds, you know, to get a population estimate and a habitat estimate. And so the numbers are low at that time of year because we had poor hatch last year based on the habitat quality. But this year, the habitat quality is much better. So I expect a more productive fall flight, you know, once those ducks got up there and nested, produced young. There was a lot of water on the landscape up there this year, more than last year. So I suspect we'll see a better fall flight this year than we did last year.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of this, too, that if you're looking for that benefit of that water up there, there's a benefit this year. But if those conditions continue, next breeding season may be even better, right? Because there's more returning to good habitat. You got more carryover, I guess, returning to better breeding conditions.
Exactly. There's more ducks on the landscape.
You talked about our bread and butter species. Makes me happy. So gadwalls are gray ducks. They're looking all right. How good is it? Is it a real good story or okay story?
It was about average this year, but they're up about 25% over the long term average. So, you know, looking good. Green winged tail, they were up 16% this year. You know, about 15% over the long term average. So, they're looking good. So those are the what you call calendar ducks. Those are the ones that are going to come down here, and you know, the other species like the mallards and the green-winged teal are going to come down, you know, later in the year as the weather pushes them down.
Yeah, let's do that too, because I mean, you and I know what we're talking about, but Mike's looking at me and like, maybe. So yeah, like you know, we talk calendar ducks, and Mike's like, were those ducks in the calendar? No. Calendar duck versus one that is a non-calendar duck. What means a calendar duck?
Yeah, so those are the species as the daylight grows shorter and winter is coming. Those species tend to get out of the northern breeding grounds faster and head south. The other ducks, the non-calendar ducks, are more weather migrators. So they rely on the cold temperatures, ice and snow on the ground to push them off their food sources, to push them further south to look for those food sources. So those are the two kind of migrating strategies that we have.
Seth, what is the issue with the mallards? Is it water conditions up north, or is it the keel ratio? What's going on with mallards?
I mean, I don't think we're seeing anything particularly going on with mallards. I think it's just a trend in ups and downs. We had a very high population just a few years ago, and I think that was probably beyond what the normal average carrying capacity was. And that's just because we had several years of wet conditions on the prairie pothole region. Now we're seeing this fluctuation where it goes between dry and wet in alternating years. And so that population is coming back down to more average level than what it has been over the past few years when we really had really wet conditions on the breeding range.
So it's not really bad. It's just getting back down to average.
Yeah, more normal, yeah. I think, conditions.
Okay, well, that's great news, really.
Yeah, but one of the problems here is, just like any good thing, here's how I'm going to ruin it. But Seth, you know, Seth is a person that, I don't know, was it 1 or 2 years ago, you and I were talking about, and I said, hey, if you could buy a piece of property to duck hunt on, mallards and other waterfowl, how far north would you go? And you had us in Missouri at that point, right? I mean, so you got, I mean, you could have a good breeding population, but, you know, this long-term trend of warmer winters, that's just a thing that's, hey, it's good the numbers are up, but they're all still north of us, right?
Right, yeah. There's some interesting research going on out there looking at harvest of banded birds, and, you know, the trends are moving north. You know, especially for mallards, their core range used to be in the Louisiana, South Arkansas, Delta region. And, you know, it's moved, it's trending further north now. If you look at, you know, more local, more recent band recoveries, you know, that's trending towards Arkansas, northern Arkansas, Missouri line. So, yeah, the trends are, you know, further north now. So as we get to warmer winters, you know, those birds obviously don't have to migrate further south. They're going to save their energy stores and fat resources and hold out as long as they can in an area where they have plenty of resources to feed on and move back north.
Well, is it because people are feeding more, planting more for the ducks up north and holding them more up there during the wintertime when it freezes? They still have a lot of food on the ground. Is that part of it?
I don't think they have. I don't think there's any more on the landscape than historically has been. I think it's just the trends of not enough ice and snow on the ground to cover that food source up that was once available, you know, to them. You know, farming practices now are even cleaner than they were, you know, 50 years ago. So it's likely that there was more leftover grain on the ground back then than there is now. So I don't think that there's more food on the ground now up north. It's just that we don't have the ice and snow cover in prolonged periods of time that we used to have.
Let's talk for a second about what we talked about earlier, calendar ducks, right? So these non-calendar ducks, they got to have the big front to push them. They've got to have, like you said, snow pack over their food so they can't get to the food. So they got to come further south. But what about a calendar duck? You know, I mean, gray ducks, like you said, photo period migrator, you know, comes down. Is there any additional nudge from weather? Because, I mean, sometimes we get a big blue norther and I see we get new gray ducks here on the causeway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, definitely influences their patterns for sure. You know, they're going to more areas where they have their ancestors or they have been in the past if they survived more than a year. So they're following other ducks, those young of the year are. And, you know, they can get pushed further south too. But, you know, we had a study with Gadwall here a couple of years ago where we put some backpack transmitters on them. And this was back in 2017, and we really had a really cold winter. And we had 4 inches of ice in northern Alabama on the lake, and you know those ducks kind of held there tight and didn't really move south. So they can be pretty hardy and hold out for a while, but you know prolonged cold temperatures will push them further south.
What about, and you bring up, gosh, we could talk for hours on this, about those, the habits, right? The long-term habits of ducks and, you know, where ducks go, where ducks want to go. You know, people are new to it and say, well, what if we build a spot over here? I'm like, do the ducks want to go there? No, then it's going to be tough. But this idea that we were, you know, I mean, we put these refuges in, we've done some things on the causeway here to try to let ducks be right, so maybe that imprinting gets better. Is there any research into that, or is there any kind of benchmark or you know baseline to judge off of?
Yeah, I mean refuges are important places to house birds. I mean they need a place that's undisturbed to feel protected in that surrounding landscape. They're moving 10 to 20 miles a day out into the surrounding landscape, and if they don't have a place to feel like they can get away from some type of pressure, whether it be boating pressure, hunting pressure, whatever, you know, any type of disturbance, then they're not going to stay in that area. They're going to find a place where they can be away from that type of pressure. So, refuges are really important. They're doing a study in Tennessee right now with mallards and dreaming teal, putting transmitters on and looking at that effects. And, they found that as hunting season increases, as it opens up and more pressure comes on the landscape, those birds really shut down to those refuge areas and only feed, at certain times on closed days or at night. And it's pretty interesting that, refuges are very important to the surrounding landscape to have, to hold a number of birds first off, but, to have those birds in the area for huntable populations.
Coming right back, more with Seth Maddox. We're talking about migratory birds in the state of Alabama. Of course, me, we're going to talk a lot about ducks, doves in the mix as well. And like I told y'all 2 weeks ago on the show, I finally got one. permit to hunt sandhill cranes in the state of Alabama. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our guest Seth Maddox. Always a treat to talk with him, talking migratory birds in the state of Alabama. I will get off the duck thing in a second, but I can't help myself, Mike. Wait, Mike's looking at me. What?
We're going to be on woodcocks, or we're going to be on doves.
I will.
We're going to be on sandhill cranes, or we're going to be on something.
Right, but when I got Seth on, I got to ask him more duck questions. So we're looking at numbers. You said it's a better story than it was last year at this time, right, for the total migratory for Mississippi Flyway. And I guess the others, I didn't even ask you about Central or Pacific or Atlantic.
Yeah, I mean, numbers are looking better across the board. So the habitat looked good, so fall flight should look better than last year.
We talked about calendar ducks. We talked about, hardier ducks. What about wood ducks? What about, you talk about our bread and butter in Alabama. You talk about gray ducks and green-winged teal. Let's add the old rainbow teal. to the mix there.
If you look at wood ducks, they're our number one harvested species, so yeah, they're definitely our bread and butter for sure. Habitat conditions looked good for breeding in the spring. We had a pretty wet spring, pretty wet summer. It's pretty consistent across the state. It's recently turned off dry, as you mentioned about food plots.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a good banding season here in the state. We banded over 900 birds. So that's pretty good for us. It's a little above average for what we normally do. That's throughout the state. We were catching birds and putting bands on. So, yeah, I think, habitat conditions looked really good. Hatch looked good. We banded a lot of young of the year birds. So, people that have a little pond or, some brushy woods, I think they can get out and hunt some wood ducks if you can't hunt any other ducks.
Yeah, and that dry portion of it, I'm not saying anything that Seth hadn't thought about. And it's a little different here on the causeway in the Delta and stuff because we just have permanent water. But you get in other areas of the state, there's
bone
a lot of places
dry.
Bone dry. So if you got water, I mean, we're not talking about, it's not the same thing as having a pumped up hole in northeast Arkansas right now. But if you're as dry as we are, man, if you got a little bit of water, Seth, it may be pretty good news for you. You may want the drought to continue.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, if you got a pretty good water source, you're going to be sitting pretty good when the season opens here, because those ducks are going to be concentrated more than ever.
And so there's a silver lining to the gray cloud of the drought.
And I'm not a duck hunter, you know. But do wood ducks migrate, or are they resident?
Both. Yeah, we have resident birds that breed here year-round, you know, or here year-round. And then, you know, as that winter progresses, we get birds from all over the U.S. We have birds from all the way from Canada. So, and we've had our birds that we banded here in-state killed in Canada. So they're back and forth migrating. And a lot of times what you see with wood ducks especially is the males tend to pair up with a female. And she may be, the female goes back to her home range where she was born at, and that's where the male will end up too. And
ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys nodding.
Get them in trouble.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys out there nodding like, yeah, that's, we had to go move close to her family.
That's right.
That's what we had to do. So, and our bread and butter bird, like the number, I don't know if you have stats in front of you. I didn't ask you beforehand. Do you have an idea, like, what an average number of wood ducks we kill in the state is in a year? Is there any way to project that or data on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's some data out there from HIP. You know, that's the importance of the HIP survey, that people, you know, get that and fill it out accurately. So we collect data through the HIP for that. Now we average probably about 75,000 wood ducks harvested a year in Alabama. It fluctuates, you know, depending on the season, you know, as what really kicks us off is opening weekend. If we have some good opening weekend hunts, you know, the first couple weekends of the season, people or hunters tend to hang in and hunt more days throughout the season. If the conditions are poor and there's not a lot of ducks around in the first couple weekends of the season, you know, a lot of people fall out and go back to the deer woods. So, yeah, it just depends on the number of hunters we have out in the field during the season. But, yeah, about 75,000, that's a pretty good year.
Okay, and you just thought about this, too. This is in the rear view, not out the front windshield, but any numbers how we did? What did you see teal-wise, blue-wing-wise this year? I mean, did we catch that big push during the open days, or did it come before or after? What's your feeling from north to south? I know it's a big state and a lot of differences, but you got any kind of data on that or just anecdotal?
Yeah, it's all anecdotal. I think just hearing people talk about it, I think it was kind of a flash in the pan this year. We probably had one good weekend out of the three weekends we were open. But, yeah, it that's about the time the drought was hitting, started to hit. And if you had water, you probably did okay. If you didn't have any water, you weren't going to get any water, so didn't have any teal. But, you know, on the bigger reservoirs, they were – here and gone. So we have, you know, a cold front come through right there about opening weekend, and you know, teal are pushing through pretty quick.
Yeah, you can't stockpile them. As I always say, I've written many articles about that over the years. Shoot them when you got them, because they're not going to be there tomorrow, most likely. All right, so we talk about the normals, the ducks that we're used to. And we could talk a little geese, although I don't, you know, we don't get a lot of geese down here.
Municipal Park's loaded with
them. Yeah, Municipal Park is, yes, with the old, the bread eaters, the Wonder Bread Eaters. I mean, I've killed some snows and some speckled bellies down here, but that's not normal. What about up in the north end of the state? Goose-wise, I know there was always a focus on that, what, James Bay population of Canada's up there?
Yeah, for a while, that's kind of why Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge in Decatur was created, was because of that population. But that population has kind of died out, mixed with other populations, and they don't really come to Alabama like they used to in the big numbers. So, you know, Sandhill Cranes have kind of taken their place in that aspect and taken over kind of Wheeler.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the geese we get are, you know, the resident Canada geese. We do get some interior Canada geese, which are a little smaller than the residents. But, yeah, we get some of those come down. A few snow geese here and there and a few white fronts. But, yeah, not a lot. We're not a big goose state.
It is nice, though. It is nice, though, for just to daydream. If you're on a deer stand in October and you're sitting there and you hear, just when they're coming over, you know, and I don't know how far they got off because they're now heading southwest. They're heading to Louisiana, but you know, cutting across our state, it is a nice thing to hear once in a while.
Yeah, right? It was interesting this past weekend. I had several phone calls and even saw some outside my house here north of Montgomery. There were apparently a bunch of specks that got pushed off course during that northern front that came through late last week and then over the weekend. Because there was, I probably got two dozen phone calls, emails that saying people saw them all over the state, heading north, south, east, and west. So I think they got blown off course during that big northwestern front we had with that rain that came through on Friday, and they're backtracking now, heading back to Arkansas.
Like, yeah, where'd we go? This is not where we're supposed to be. Look at all these pine trees. We're not in the right place.
Geese, I mean, it's something that I haven't seen years ago. I didn't used to see any geese in all the ponds and lakes around. Is that something that now every pond you go to has got a bunch of geese on it? Is that something that's just happened in the last 20 years, or have I just not paid any attention?
I think the population has grown. The resident population has grown over the last 20 years or so. They tend to get to those places that are non-huntable and kind of sit there and they can breed freely. They don't have a lot of predators, and their population just kind of tends to expand pretty quickly. And so we have more residential places coming popping up on the map too, where they're creating ponds in these neighborhoods and golf courses and stuff like that. So have a lot more of that on the landscape. So it's kind of a free range, safe place for those geese to chill up. So you're probably seeing more because the population is growing, but there's also more places for them on the landscape now.
Yeah, because used to, I mean, when you saw geese, you said, "Man, look at there! There's geese over there. I've never seen that before." You know, and now it's like they're everywhere. Every pond you go to just about got a set of geese on them.
Hello?
Yeah, we're there. Yeah, sorry, we dropped out for a second. I do want to shift gears before we go to the news. We'll come back, obviously, talk more about this because it's self-serving. But you mentioned as the geese moved out at Wheeler, sandhill cranes moved in. And this is – so I try to explain to non-hunters, and I think I've actually made some converts over the years – whether I'm talking about, birds or land animals, I said, being able to hunt a critter that was in danger shows the value of conservation and science. You know, the fact that we are hunting sandhill cranes is a commentary on the success of science and conservation. Don't you agree?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, they were a species that was hunted to near extinction, you know, before we had game laws in place. And, you know, so when the Migratory Bird Treaty Act came along in 1916 and stopped all that, you know, it shut down sandhill crane season. And, it took 100 years to get back to a huntable population, but we're here now, and the population with three states, you know, east of the Mississippi River with a hunting season open on them, the population is still continuing to grow. So we're definitely not hurting the population. It's definitely a tribute to all the people that put in hard work, all the money that's been dedicated to conservation to put in that habitat on the ground, that we have the opportunity to hunt these birds again.
Yeah, it's so very cool. When people look at these stories, I take these stories to people in your life that are not hunters and explain why conservation works, and why it's good for those critters too. Now that they have a whole new group of people other than just bird watchers, you have hunters that are now doing, hey, what can we do to help the population grow? We're there to do it. All right, coming right back, we're going to talk more about sandhill cranes, the lottery. I didn't tell y'all before. Oh, yeah, I did tell y'all. I got drawn.
Yep.
And so we'll talk about that also. Yeah, as we talk about other migratory birds, you and I, Mike, always have dove questions. Yep. My specific question every year for Seth is, why aren't the doves at my farm?
Yeah, you have the same seven there as you've had for 10 years.
Yeah, the same. It was eight the other day when I came out the driveway. we'll ask about that. And we come back. More with Seth Maddox right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Don't pick on me, man. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Our guest Seth Maddox joins us hopefully again right before duck season. We might get him back in for the y'all do flyovers. What's the schedule? I know it's weather dependent, but how many do you do a year around here or around the state?
We typically do twice a year, once in the Delta and in the Tennessee Valley. Preseason survey and then a midwinter survey. The last couple of years, we've been doing an extra one in December and an extra one at the end of January because we have a research project going on looking at our survey methods. So, but yeah, typically twice a year.
And people can look, like me, look forward to that preseason fly for what is it, Thanksgiving week? When do y'all do that?
Yeah, we try to do it the week either the weekend before Thanksgiving or that week following up to Thanksgiving.
Okay. So, yeah, y'all be looking for that. We'll be talking about that. But, yeah, on the sandhill crane thing, pretty neat. So how many years has it been? Has it been two or three years that we've had this lottery for permits?
Since 2019 was our first season. So we're going on our fifth year this year.
See, I'm not good with math. That's because he's a scientist. He's good with math. Yeah. So what he said, yes. So 5 years of this.
We were on experimental the first 4 years, and we finally come off experimental. That's when you open a new season under the Fish and Wildlife Service regs. We had to kind of restrict a little bit of what we were doing, take a look at the data, and make sure we were, abiding by all the rules and not over-harvesting and killing non-target species, stuff like that. So this is our first year off that experimental, and we have this season in perpetuity now, as long as the population stays above a certain threshold. So we're looking good. So, the first 4 years we had 400 permits we gave out. We increased that this year to 750 permits. So we have more opportunity now. We're still limiting three birds per permit, but we have more people that are allowed to hunt this year. So we always like it to have more opportunity as much as we can. The thing we're limited in now is just public land, so we're always looking for more opportunity to allow people to access it. A lot of it's locked up in private land, and they do really good, and, they let their buddies and friends hunt, but a lot of the people that don't have access to that struggle to find some. We do have some public land opportunities, but it can kind of get over harvested or overused. So birds get more wary. But it's been a really good opportunity for us to open up a new season. The first time we've opened up a new hunting season since alligators in 2012. So.
Another success story, another conservation success story, there's a way that's
exactly.
So I'm one of these folks and I have to have some windshield time. Number one, just to find them. But number two, to be legal, this is a bird, the sandhill cranes we hunt. There's a demarcation line, right? Coming from east to west, west to east through the state where we can hunt them.
Well, it's actually north to south.
North to south, okay.
So the line is, the corridor through Birmingham there, the interstate corridor through Birmingham, north to south. Everything north of Birmingham essentially is the Sandhill Crane Zone. Everything south is closed. We have there's experimental populations of sandhill cranes over in southern Mississippi, and there's experimental populations down in Florida. So those are non-hunted populations, and so we didn't want to. Sometimes those can cross over the line into southern Alabama, and we don't want to harvest any of those birds that are experimental. So we want to stick to the eastern population, the migratory birds that come down from Canada and the northern U.S. And those birds tend to winter in the Tennessee Valley along the Tennessee River, and then over into eastern Alabama along the Coosa River on the Weiss Lake. So, and some of those birds can carry on and go to Florida, but we're a really big area for overwintering cranes in northern Alabama now. As the population grows, they're expanding and moving all over the place. We're finding them in new places each year. So
I think it's a good thing. I'm not complaining, but why is that? Because it's think here, you look to our west and you go waterfowl wise, right? Mississippi better, Arkansas, Louisiana better, and seems like we have more of a sandhill crane story to tell here than they do, even though you go further west into Texas and there's a way that's, a different population of them. There's more, but what are we doing right to hold these cranes? What do they like?
They like agriculture, and then shallow water, which they find along, our, river systems in Alabama. You're right. There's two different populations. There's actually more than that, but the two we're talking about here, the central or the mid-continent population, which is what comes down the central flyway and goes into Texas, and then the eastern population, which is what we have everything east of the Mississippi is. there are two different actually subspecies of cranes. You know, we have the large subspecies of cranes here, so ours are bigger than the ones they get out in Texas. So the greater sandhill cranes. And, you know, they come down every year, and as the populations continue to grow, they're just spreading out and finding new places. But, yeah, historically, we're kind of in that funnel of where they migrate to. Historically, they migrated from the north all the way down into Florida. And, you know, now we are, you know, essentially short-stopping some of them because the population has grown. They can't all go to Florida. And we have, you know, really good habitat for them in that northern tier of the state. And so they tend to hang around and find it enjoyable to stay for the wintertime.
Hey, finally I get to live in a short-stopping state. Yes, I'm always worried about the states north of me. Now, yes, right, Alabama, the short-stop.
Do we have them around Mobile? Do we have sandhill cranes around Mobile? I don't know that I've ever seen any.
No, not typically. You may see a few, ones that straight off course. You may see some from that Mississippi population. There's that Mississippi Sandhill Crane Refuge over there.
Which is not far. Yeah.
And some of those tend to come across the line every once in a while. But, yeah, you probably wouldn't typically see them in that Mobile area.
You know, I don't even know what a sandhill crane is, but
At least he's honest.
I am. But I was fishing a tournament, King Michael tournament down in South Florida, and we had to cut across some back roads going to East Coast or the West Coast. Anyway, I saw these big cranes down there, and every time I'd see one, I'd think it was a deer in the field. Are they that big that they would look like a deer? I mean, you know, size wise.
Yeah.
Okay,
they're about 5 feet tall.
Then that's probably what I saw. Yeah. I saw a bunch of them down there, and I couldn't figure out. I'd never seen them before. So I guess that's what I was seeing down there.
Yeah, like I said, they have those resident populations down in Florida and in southern Mississippi there. And so they're kind of like our resident geese. They just tend to hang around there all year round, whereas the ones we're hunting are the migratory, more wild population.
Yeah, and Mike, but they're not all because, I mean – you should know, and the state makes sure you know when you get drawn that there's a difference because there's whooping cranes as well, and they could overlap in territory, right, Seth? So, I mean, because I took the class, I did my study, and it's pretty heavy on, you know, do you shoot, not shoot? It was pretty intense.
Yeah, whooping cranes, you know, they can look very similar, especially in low light conditions. They're pretty unmistakable. They're white and they're a little bit bigger, not a whole lot bigger than the greater subspecies that we have here. They're endangered species. So they are protected. There's not very many of them left in the population. Less than 1,000 that in the wild population that come down to the coastal Texas every year. And then we get some over here east of the Mississippi that are in the experimental population. And there's a few hundred of those birds left in that population. So
what should I expect from the hunt? Like, you know, and I know, you know, there's only so many people get drawn, but more people put in every year for the lottery. And like you said, number of tags going up. Like, what do I expect? I've watched some videos. Am I decoying them like ducks? Do I have to be super hid? What do you give me kind of the layout of a sandhill hunt here in Alabama?
Yeah, you got to be really hidden. I've hunted them a few different ways, out of a pit blind, out of layout blinds, out of a A-frame blind. But you got to be pretty camouflaged. Not a lot of movement. You want a lot of cover in front of you. Yeah, they'll decoy. What I've seen here in Alabama and talked to a lot of hunters, they don't like silhouettes very much. So they like full bodies or stuffers. And, you know, they're very weary, especially if you're hunting the same place over and over and over throughout the season. So, you know, you want to move around to different areas when you're hunting them. Don't put too much pressure on them. But they will decoy in, and when they decoy in and do it right in front of your face, it's more probably one of the most amazing sights you'll see, just because it's such a big bird.
Yeah, the videos I've watched of these successful hunts on YouTube, I'm like, that is crazy how big they are coming in. And are you call? I mean, I hear people using call. Is the call worth doing? Not worth doing? What's your take on that?
That's kind of like anything else, you know, with duck hunting or in general, decoy wise. Call wise, you know, you got to put put something out there, see if it works. You know, you try again, experiment, and see what's working that day. You know, it could change the next day. So, yeah, we try calling a little bit and, you know, using decoys, not using decoys, setting up in different places, different setups. You know, you just have to try a little bit different things. And if something's not working, make a change and hope they like what you changed. It just depends.
Do I want big blue skies like on a, you know, good mallard day, or do I want some low clouds? Either one better?
I think blue sky is probably better. Clouds is not too bad. You don't want any rain. They typically don't fly too good in the rain. No spitting rain, no hard rain, anything. So from what I found, I think blue skies is probably the best. And, you know, just hope that we get, again, some cold weather. The more cold weather we get, the more birds we're going to have, and that always makes hunting better if we have more birds to look at.
Yeah, I need every chance I can get. We're coming right back. More with Seth Maddox right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Never enough time. We have this man on the show, Seth Maddox, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Here in the last segment here, talk ducks, talk geese, talk sandhill cranes. I guess we need to, well, because I got drawn this year, I can finally be free with, I'm shooting myself in the foot. Seth, can you tell folks for next year what they have to do to get these permits for sandhills?
Yeah, so we open the registration period in September of every year. Go to our website and just search Sandhill Crane. You'll find the link to register. You have to have your hunting license and your state duck stamp prior to registering. And then once the registration period is over, we hold the drawing. If you're lucky enough to get drawn, then you take a test and then buy the permit, and we send you the permit, and you're good to go once the season comes in.
Yeah, so I guess I've been doing it. So you said first one in experimental was 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing it since then. So give people an idea. But I'm an unlucky person. So
it took you 5 years to get a tag.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So
four years, 5 years.
I'm pretty unlucky too. I got drawn the first year, but I haven't been drawn since. So I've been acting as guide since then. So.
That's my running story on gator hunting down here. It's funny, the people I've taken from all over. Take them gator hunting. They're like, how often do you get drawn? I said, I've never been drawn.
Yeah.
I said, I've been drawn. I just guide y'all to gators. Well, we got a second talking migratory birds. Doves. I know we mentioned that earlier. Any idea how doves are trending overall in the state of Alabama? Is that too big of a slice to look at?
We can go even bigger. We've managed them. We're part of the Eastern Management Unit. Pretty much everything from Louisiana east. The population overall is down and has been trending down for the last 10 years or so. Not sure exactly what the cause is. Probably a combination of a lot of things. Not no one thing to pinpoint, but, you know, we were at historic highs there for a long time, and it was really good, really good. And, you know, just coming back down to maybe more, like we talked about, mallards, maybe closer to normal. It's probably dipping a little below what we normally would have at historically on average. So, you know, people are seeing that while they're out hunting. You know, it's harder to fill your limit. You know, you're not having as many days where you're filling a bag limit of 15. But hopefully, you know, that turns around here. They does cycle in trends, you know, like that. It goes up and down. They're a weak, you know, very weak bird. They don't live very long in the wild, you know, a couple of years on average probably. But they produce a lot of young. That's the great thing about them. You know, they're producing 2 chicks per nesting and, you know, nest about 8 times a year here in the state of Alabama. So we not only get, you know, resident birds, we get a push of migratory birds as well from the north. As the season progresses, you know, you may see more birds than you would. You know, a lot of people don't take advantage of that later season hunts, but a lot of times you can have some really good hunts. And then sometimes if you just have more people on the field, you'd probably have a lot better hunt than just you and a couple of buddies. But The doves are probably down a little bit. I think we saw that as the season opened this year. You know, people still had good hunts, but not as probably good as in the recent past.
I learned something new. I didn't know that they would breed up to 8 times a year. That is huge.
Yeah, if you look at the trends in harvest, we're, you know, probably 75% of our harvest is hatch year birds, the birds that were born in the year you're harvesting them. So we're putting a big dent in the population of young birds, but you know those older birds are the ones putting out those nests, and they produce a lot of offspring. But you know there's something going on out there right now. We just haven't pinpointed it yet to see what's driving the population down.
Yeah, I wonder about that when you talk about the number of birds, the first of the year birds that get early on, because people say, well, that now it's later in the season, those big northern doves are coming down. But is that true, or is it just more mature doves? You know, they've grown more. You know, I mean, is there some difference in size by one that was hatched in Ohio and ended up here versus one that was hatched down the road?
No, I mean nothing different in size. They're not bigger like deer would be bigger up there. Based on, you know, just temperature and weather patterns. But, they're just aging, you know. They'll start breeding in, you know, February or March each year here in Alabama. And, you know, they'll hatch two birds out per clutch. And you know, they could nest all the way until August. And so, you know, some of those birds you're harvesting were just born last month when you're hunting in September. So they just look smaller in hand. They have those buffy tips. They'll have a tan tip to their on their wings, a lot of tan mm-hmm. in the feathers, versus that more grayish, dark brown color. But yeah, it's those younger ones growing up that are just bigger.
I hate to ruin that for everybody. All the hunts I was on when I was a kid, we go at a late hunt, they'd say, this is the big northern dove, Sean, coming down here. I'm like, well, yeah. Don't you think maybe they just got bigger? No, these are northern doves. You've mentioned this, and before we wrap up, things you have to do to be legal. And if you're hunting migratory birds, a HIP or like HIP, you got to fill that out. When you go to Outdoor Alabama, it's going to get you to do that. Why is that? Why do people? It doesn't cost anything. So what do y'all care?
Yeah, the Harvest Information Program is a very important survey we do. It's actually a pre-survey, so they're asking basically, did you hunt certain species last year, and if you did, how many did you harvest? And you know, they're based in categories. And that is a pre-screening question to send you survey questions in the mail during the hunting season. So there's two types of surveys they send out. They send out a diary survey, which is ask you to keep up with all your hunts throughout the season for whatever species you're drawing for. And then there's a parts collection survey or the wing survey. So they ask you to take clip some wings off the birds and send those back in. And all that data goes back into how we set seasons and bag limits and regulations for migratory game birds. You know, we look at harvest, look at those wings, whether they're a hatchier bird or an adult bird, look at sex of the birds. And so that's how we drive trends in harvest and set population limits and bag limits on that. We also look at how much pressure was on these birds, you know, in the field based on that hunter survey, that diary survey. You know, how many trips are people taking, how often they're in the field, how many hours they're spending in the field. So all of that data is collected, and it goes back in with the preseason survey, the survey of the pond, survey of the ducks, and that's three legs of the stool that go back in together. And this is how the data that's put into the formula that comes spits out our bag limits and you know, season dates every year.
There we go. And that's why we do it. Seth, we appreciate you as always. And maybe I'll lean on you, get you right here before duck season starts.
Thank you, Seth.
All good, guy. All right. Yeah, thanks.
All right, Seth Maddox, our guest. And we'll do it again next week. Y'all have a great one.